Welcome to The Colorcast, a show about color grading, color science, and post-production. We are the Coloristos. I'm Jason Myers, a colorist in Los Angeles.
And I'm Josh Petock, a colorist in Los Angeles as well.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist in New York City. Today, we were thinking, one of the big things we have to keep doing over and over and over again as we go into color is conform and getting into the color session. And I thought we should talk about round-tripping. How do we get into color? How do we conform editorial, and how is that going to work going forward? What are the techniques we're using? For me, I find, you know, lately I've been working on a lot of features, and I'm finding myself actually seeing that round trip process as more of a one-way ticket. It's not so much, I'm not buying the round trip ticket, I'm getting the one-way ticket, and I'm actually just going from editorial into Resolve and actually just finishing Resolve more and more. But I know the round trip is actually a really common process for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I'm still working a lot in Symfony, and there's no round trip, really. It's just everything. That's an option, too, is like, Do you actually need to send out to an external application? So I guess you could say people would be working in Symfony. They could be working in Final Cut Pro still. They could even be using the Baselight plugin in whatever application, whatever NLE they want to be working in. If they want to bypass that, for me, at the facility I'm working at, we need to do a lot of different versioning of different things. We have promo, or we have international deliveries and stuff like that as well. So sometimes it's easier to keep everything in the same domain. The only problem with that is that you don't get good color tools in the NLEs. You get all the benefit of the workflow, but you don't get really great color tools.
Or you have the color tools, but you don't have the grade management, like in the case of the Baselight plugin, which has really nice color tools, but doesn't have grade management. But, you know, there are people, I've done jobs before where we just did it straight in FCP and just did the three-way, and you can get, you know, you can do a decent amount of work right in the NLE, and it's not unworkable, but there are definitely advantages to going to a dedicated grading app. I know, Josh, I think you guys are considering a workflow change that's going to take you out of Symfony and into Resolve World. Is that right?
Absolutely. It ends up being an equation where, can I save more time if I have better color tools and better management? I can actually color things faster, and I will take the hit on the actual workflow if I need to. So sending things back and forth, maybe I'm doing more rendering than I might do because a lot of the things play in real time on Symfony. Mm-hmm.
Well, but the renders in Resolve are, you know, usually real time plus.
Exactly. Anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be like a question of, I'm going to be using more disk space because potentially the stuff in Symfony is, I have a color effect on something, I don't have to render it, and it goes straight out to tape.
Yeah. I think what a lot of people are dealing with is what you're dealing with, Josh, is that they are rethinking for the first time in a while how they work. And so I think that's come from a lot of new options. So, for instance, in the past, if you were going to be working in an Avid workflow or with Media Composer, there was a really pretty typical assumption that you'd be going to Symfony. And that wasn't really challenged for, I think, a long time. You know, a lot of people really liked that and it worked well. And then, you know, you're exactly that kind of operation. And now you're thinking about going to Resolve. So it's the first time that you've had to figure out a number of things that sort of the Symfony Media Composer combination did for you sort of very seamlessly, you know. And then I think with Resolve becoming so popular, as well as some other color tools, you've got this situation where a number of people who say we're using Final Cut and Color, or people who might want to introduce Smoke or even Final Cut 10, and then you've got a whole passel of people that are looking at Premiere. Everybody's trying to figure out a new way to work, you know, given the NLE and the color tools they want to use, you know, for their given project. So,
well, I think, and I think that's kind of where you saw, like, at NAB, you know, you saw the Resolve version 10 announcement where they were saying, you know, it's like an online editor now. I think they're thinking of that kind of workflow where, you know, sometimes going back is more of a hassle than getting in, right?
Yeah.
And so, but in a situation like doing broadcast work, like Josh is, where you've got Texas deliverables, Texas deliverables, international versions, you've got all this versioning that you need to do, different audio configurations for deliverables. There's a real value to being in the NLE for that kind of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's not just resolve either, because I mean, there's a lot of other companies too that are using Baselight with a lot of success too.
Sure.
I know Chainsaw is a big facility out here that does a lot of the same kind of work. They, you know, run everything through Baselight. It's interesting to see how everybody else skins that cat too. I mean,
well, Baselight does, you know, just like Resolve does both workflows, where Baselight does the same thing. So in Baselight, you can round trip just like you can in Resolve, you know, from Avid, going from Avid into Resolve, you can export an AAF, you know, link back to your camera original media or link back to your Avid media. Same thing in Baselight. Do your grade, and then you can render out new Avid media and export a new AAF that just modifies basically the references. So instead of referencing to the original media, the AAF is now referencing to the newly rendered media that you then have to import and link in your NLE.
Right. And, you know, I still really do like preconform workflow, too. I think that that works great. Mm-hmm. Being able to see everything in context as well.
Especially with the preconform workflow where you, like, if you're working with reality series, the, you know, you get so much, like, effects being done onto the image and things that might be picture in picture or, you know, might be, you know, little composites that are being done in the NLE. That preconform just lets you flatten all that out and you don't have to think about how is this actually going to look in the final piece when it's being sped up and composited and has a glow filter applied to it that's not being applied in the color session.
Is it possible, because I had this question once and I didn't know really how to answer it, is it possible to do part of a workflow in preconform and then do, say if you have a section of your sequence that's got a ton of picture in pictures on it and you don't want to window each of those parts, can you do part of it as an AF and part of it as a preconform?
Well, I guess you could, you know, you could kind of break it up, right? So you could just break up that scene and take that scene out of the preconform and do it in the, as its own little subsection.
Right.
What I've done a lot is, you know, in situations where I'm not doing the kind of the finishing, I'm just doing color, is I will ask clients to sort of, you know, I'm happy to charge for the time to do it, but, you know, if you want to save money, just why don't you just basically do a string out in your NLE? So I'll ask clients to break up the layers. So if they've got elements that are sort of, they're doing some kind of composite on, just break it up, remove all the speed effects. So we're not having to deal with speed effects at all. And just basically do a string out. It becomes kind of like the old, Telesydney sessions where you'd get like an EDL of just all the shots just back to back to back. And you'd make a new tape with the matching time code. And then somebody else would have to conform that, you know, and that would be their workflow.
Right.
And so that means you don't have to, as a colorist, you don't have to worry about how is this all going to fit together. All I'm worrying about is how does this shot look? How does this shot look? How does this shot look? And I'm just getting out that way. Now, that said, you know, that there are sometimes you're missing the bigger picture when you're doing that. And so there's times, and that's what the old kind of online editor position used to sort of take care of, is how to put everything together. But where, you know, workflows are changing and sort of positions are changing, and I don't think that that is necessarily a valid workflow anymore.
Yeah. The one thing too is that there is a recent opportunity I had to use A mode and C mode. So the idea of, you know, taking the actual sequence and then putting them back to back based on, you know, their source. I found it kind of interesting because there was an initial grade that I'd done where everything was largely balanced and I was just trying to get shots that were similar. For instance, like it was a music video and there are the shots of the band sort of head on. And one thing that was really interesting was that during the actual filming, there was some light changing and I was incorporating those light changes into the grade. So for instance, earlier on in the video, it was a little brighter and then later on it was a little darker and it just sort of worked. But then when I put it into, C mode, am I right? Yeah. Essentially what happened was I was noticing how now when all the shots were stacked side by side, like these shots of the band head on, you know, you could sort of see how they were changing and that there was a certain amount of massaging needed based on where they were placed in the sequence. And so even though they were close, there was this idea that they were slightly different. And so, C mode exposed that a bit. And so that was an interesting angle that if you were to just grade stuff based on their source out of order, let's say, and then put them in order, I think you might get an interesting surprise or two, at least somewhere in there. You know, so you do want to see it in context, probably at least once.
Yeah. I'm nodding my head here. Because that's exactly the point. It's like, you know, sometimes seeing things in context is important. And I think what, you know, in the kind of the old world workflow where you literally were going back to your 35 millimeter original camera negative, you would see people bringing a reference tape, actually back then, a reference tape, but a reference of the cut so the colorist could see kind of, okay, this is what it's going to look like in context. Here's where that shot actually is in the cut. This is how we should handle it. So that is an important factor. I think, well, I mean, that's probably the exception rather than the rule, I think, in terms of, because I think, well, it depends also the kind of work you're in, but most like commercial work or like, you know, feature work, it's pretty much in context. You're not really seeing that kind of jumping around of context.
Yeah, definitely. One thing too, it's interesting is that speaking to the pre-conform workflow, Josh, because I know you've been excited about that. So there's actually a number of other people that have brought that up. And so I've been asked on a couple occasions in the last couple months, like, how do I do it? And so one of the things that I sort of told people was, at least to me, the major question of whether you do a preconform or not is just, you know, what's going on with transitions. And I know we've chatted about this before, but what mm-hmm. I'll say at a basic level, if you're just slicing at the cut point, if you have a transition, you're going to have an interesting effect of one grade might be different enough that that'll be abrupt change, you know, from one clip to the other. If you try to grade through that transition. And one of the things that I found out is that most people only have a couple transitions. So let's say that they have, you know, either hour-long project that's a documentary, or they have something shorter, or even a feature. Maybe they really only need transitions for a couple moments when there's sort of a change in time or place, and they need to convey that. And so what a lot of people, what I've been telling some people to do, and what I've done recently too, is to do the scene to tech workflow, or use an EDL to cut up your rendered out full video or your full film, then go and selectively where you need to just reinsert the original clips in sort of Resolve or whatever their color grading tools timeline you're using. Just reinsert those clips where you need overlapping media. And boy, I'll tell you, you get the advantages of not having to go through the pure difficulty of a tough conform, or at least just the speed of the scene to detect workflow. But then at, say, five places, you just grab, let's say, those 10 clips so that you're able to go and have overlapping media. And it's a really nice way to sort of enjoy
the
both angles.
The only thing that I would advise against if you're going to do a scene detect workflow is that you don't get the option to color trace if you have changes. And that's really important, because with things, who knows if, like, what cut I'm working on, if something gets unlocked or something changes. Basically, I have a good connection between those because I have actual tape names and I have source time code that comes along with the EDL. So that makes a big difference for me, because I can confidently go through and say, well, I can even work on this early if needs be, but I know that if I get another sequence in, I can color trace it and I'll be okay.
I think that Josh just brings up a really kind of key benefit to actually working with the original media as opposed to working with a preconform or an EDL, is that you can, you know, in like your workflow, Josh, where you've got the advantages in Symphony of being able to just grade a shot once that's going to recur over the course of the episode, or even over the course of multiple episodes, where, for example, you've got interview shots for characters in a show.
Right.
With Resolve, if you're grading the original media, and this applies to Baseline, those grades can be tracked with the media as opposed to tracked with the clip in the timeline. So as you're conforming, if you're conforming that edit, a different edit into the same project, it'll automatically have those remote grades applied into that clip. So you can actually kind of do the same thing you're doing in Symphony, which is grade once and apply multiple times.
Yeah, now that we have all kinds of raw shooting cameras too, that's the other benefit that you lose out of a preconform, is you don't get access to all that raw data.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And that's one of those things where, like, for example, I've had jobs that were shot on Red. And now a lot of people who are shooting Red are actually editing in Premiere, because Premiere has some of the best Red raw media support, where you can almost kind of work with raw media at one eighth the bay or something. They'll do their edit off Red media, and they will do speed effects and do all these things that are even picture in picture or layered things. Then they'll come to me to conform, and I'll want to conform off the raw media, but a lot of those things don't transfer in the from editorial into Resolve. You know, in the current version of Premiere, even the positioning, like the repos, don't work into Resolve. You know, I would be able to do a pre-conformed workflow for that, where all the speed effects would get burned in and the repos would get burned in, but that would mean a serious hit in terms of being able to access the latitude of the raw media.
Yeah, I really do keep thinking that the hybrid workflow is like the best of both worlds, because if you find a shot that you say, well, I wish I had more access to data in this, because you may not need that for every shot. At least you could just take that raw shot and cut it in, get what you need out of it. Ideally, you have an assistant that you could just say, go get me this shot because I need more access to the data on this one.
Well, I'll say that there's one downside to that, which is that if you're dealing with the raw in one grade versus dealing with the debayered media in another grade, that grades, and if you're copying grades from one shot to another, your grades or your LUTs, they won't work the same.
Oh yeah, that is true. That's true.
So that's just one day. I mean, that's just one downside. So you know, there is an advantage, I think, in terms of, and it all really depends to, we make decisions about how much time and what, you know, we make kind of value judgments about is this benefit worth this cost of time? And so when you've got a tight deadline and you're working for broadcast and you're trying to turn things around, that cost benefit analysis is usually like, well, yeah, it's probably better to do it this way, even if it's 10%, you know, harder to work with, just because it's going to be faster. Whereas, in the feature world, you're kind of that cost benefit tends to work the other way, where you're kind of like, well, this is going to take me twice as long because I have to conform back to the raw media, but I'm going to have the advantage of consistent behavior and access to the latitude.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is with any workflow, it's important to think backwards, if that makes any sense. Like you need to figure out where you're going to end up. Once you know, am I going to be outputting to a HDCam SR tape? Am I going to be delivering files? Am I going to be making a DCP? That's a big you know, factor as to what your workflow is going to be. I have never actually output anything to tape from Resolve. So
right.
Who knows if, and the other part of it is I'm not always doing those outputs either. Sometimes I'm handing that off to somebody else. So I can never be sure if somebody's vetted in all of the idiosyncrasies that Resolve has.
No, I think my judgments tend to be, I think the same way too. I think, okay, is this going to be something where the primary delivery is a 4K master? I'm probably going to plan my finishing process around not leaving Resolve. So I'll have the title house make titles with a matte channel that I can then bring in and superimpose in Resolve and actually finish it that way, which hopefully gets a little bit easier in version 10. And I know that that's fairly easy and common in Baselight. And, you know, I'll plan accordingly. I'll burn in effects shots. If something's being retimed, I'll do it there. Whereas if it's something for broadcast, you know, I may do things like I want to do noise reduction on something. If I'm doing it for a theatrical release where I'm finishing it in Resolve, then I'll probably do the noise reduction before it comes into Resolve. But if I'm doing a broadcast master where I'm probably going back to the editorial to do the actual final deliveries, then I'll probably just save that until I go bounce it back into the editorial and just do the noise reduction editorial.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because that's the final spot where somebody's going to be reviewing from as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I find really interesting too. If I'm doing my final review, say in Symphony, and I've gone through a whole round trip and somebody says, well, you know what, I want to change the color in this scene, then you have to bounce back over to Resolve.
Sure.
You need to change everything and then re-render and then watch it all in context.
Yep. Yeah, that's a tough spot too. When I'm doing a round trip workflow and I'm going to come back to the NLE anyways, I will definitely do a review pass with the client in Resolve. You know, basically say at this point where it's sort of like doing a sound mix, right? You listen to that sound mix out of context with the final picture and make a decision about, okay, is this okay? It's sort of the same thing in Resolve with the round trip workflow. You know, you review it in Resolve, make sure the color is what the client wants and is happy with before you bounce it out to do the sort of final finishing steps. But, you know, hopefully we get to do less and less of that, or we have to do less and less of that as kind of the software develop.
Well, you know, even for the shows that I'm doing too, I think it's really helpful for people to review in different environments. So they're listening at the mix, they're looking at color in the color, and they're looking at stuff like titles and effects and lower thirds and all that stuff in the online, which to me is, it helps actually make the product better because you can concentrate on different things.
Sure. It also keeps the client focused on, okay, this is the thing we're dealing with. And it keeps you from having to jump back and forth between, you know, whereas if you're in Symphony and you're doing everything in the same, in the same platform, you might be looking at one shot and worrying about something you have to blur out, and they might be concerned about the lower third that's in it or the color that's on it. And so it's kind of distracting to you mentally as you're kind of bouncing from one discipline to another, as opposed to being able to focus and say, okay, we're dealing with this discipline right now. Let's get all of this straightened away, and then we'll worry about that discipline afterwards. And Jason, I know you had, I think you did a little freelance work with FCP 7 and XSAN, and you were trying to conform into Resolve 8. Do you want to go through that nightmare?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the one thing that was interesting is that was sort of like to that earlier point, you know, this was a company that was doing television shows for Speed TV. And the thing that was interesting was just that they had been using FCP and color for a long time, and that had been really reliable for them. But one of the things that was a little bit challenging, and it has made them a little bit sloppy, I would say, you know, not awful, but that send to color situation that you have with those two apps had allowed them to get away with a lot of things, you know, including, you know, kind of being very sort of arbitrary about their file management. And when you're dealing with an XSAN, so their XSAN, I think, was a 1 petabyte XSAN, which is large, you know, it's pretty big. And, you know, the folder structure, if you guys have ever been to some companies that have, you know, like 400 or 500 folders in each directory, you know, and, you know, each TV show is put together with elements from all over the place. And so the challenge you run into when you're trying to conform is that, you know, there's this convenience versus flexibility thing. It seems like anything that's convenient destroys all of your options later on, you know, and then anything that's really difficult to do gives you the options later that might save you in terms of getting across the finish line. So the thing that we ended up doing was doing a basically like a consolidate and then linking to those files, because there was so much stuff pulled from all over the SAN that when we took a straight XML out of Final Cut, which was referencing all across the SAN for the file locations, and we asked Resolve 8, which is what they had based on a limitation on the OS that they could run. Essentially, I think they were stuck in like 10.6.8, believe it or not. The situation is that Resolve would try to go and find those files across the SAN to pull them into the timeline, and literally just sort of the gears were just spinning on Resolve for, you know, I think a half hour or 45 minutes. And there was a point where we were just trying to get an episode done a day. So a day was about 8 to 10 hours. And we realized that there was this indefinite waiting that we were doing that we weren't sure if it was making any progress or if it was, you know, sort of steadily getting through it. And so we decided that we couldn't risk the idea that it might go for an hour and a half and not get us, you know, a conformed timeline. And so we ended up consolidating to a folder that allowed us to go and sort of make it easier on Resolve, you know. And I know that actually one of the things that's nice about Resolve 9, which we couldn't take advantage of, was the idea that Resolve 9 has a lot of really nice new conform features. But an interesting discovery was that I guess it was 8.2.2 two, I think. Essentially, it took, it's really nice. Blackmagic took a number of the Resolve 9 conform features, at least I had never noticed this before, and brought them back into Resolve 8. So the very latest version of Resolve 8 seems to have things like the clip conflict resolution window and sorts of things like that that help you deal with, you know, the whole time code extents error, which I'm sure people have run into and all that stuff. And we had a lot of GoPro footage because it was basically two auto shows I was helping them with that those sort of time code things always seem to appear on, you know. So what they did is they had these enormous, you know, 38 gig GoPro files that they were taking and then bringing right into Final Cut and then editing the pieces out of that. I mean, it was really, really rugged. But they were getting time-lapse GoPro and then just bringing that whole clip in.
When you media manage those, they don't trim because they don't have time code.
Right. Right, exactly. And so the thing
is, so you got these 38 gig copies that right. when you're consolidating.
You know, and what it would be is, like, let's say that they did this one thing for an off-roading adventure and they basically had a GoPro strapped to the roof of their Jeep for, you know, the entire day. And so then they're bringing like five of those, one per Jeep, into the into Final Cut to make a montage of sort of the heads up cam of every Jeep, you know. And they're these enormous GoPro non-time coded H.264s. So then they transcode them into ProRes and try to edit them down. And so that was part of the trick, was just the realities of what they were doing in the field coming to bear on us in post production, along with the fact that they had been a little bit loose with their file organizing, you know, and the fact that it was all across an enormous XSAN. So it was just very tough on the software.
I have to ask.
Yeah.
So why didn't they go for a preconform workflow on that?
Because they have a lot of transitions. And we did try that, actually. And you know what happened? We ran into a situation where there was enough broken in one of the conforms that we just went and did it. And actually, that was my lesson on what happens when you do a pre-conform workflow with a lot of transitions. So they had, if you've heard of a transition, basically like a cross blur, you know, essentially they were using that to change time and place. So they're like, okay, so now we're here at the Sierra Nevada mountains, and they would be using cross blurs to pull the segments together as they moved about their various places, you know, say on their trip. And I would say that there was easily, just trying to think, I think each episode had about 400 cuts in it, and there's probably 30 or 40 or 50 cross blurs in each episode, you know. And so we were like, we've just got to do it. So I totally did the, I rendered it out, and then we cut it up, and I had to sort of hand massage and use a combination of animation and just really conservative grading to make it so that those cuts between those cross blurs was just not this sort of egregious, big jarring change. Now, the cross blur also helped a lot because there was some interpretation that what was going on at that hard cut was just sort of part of the cross blur. So that was a great transition to be trying to cut right in the middle of. You know, heaven forbid we have a star wipe or something, right? But, you know, the thing would be that you can get away with it to a certain extent, but there is a convenience to the scene detect workflow that also takes away options. And that's, you know, the big balance. Like, for instance, Josh, you mentioned that you were really relying a lot on clip connections. For myself, I'm almost doing a locked cut that never gets changed again. Or if they do, it's a really small couple frames here, couple frames there thing. So the clip connections aren't as critical for me as it might be, say, for you or Juan. So.
Right. The thing that I noticed most of all is that the speed of your project is way faster when you're working preconform too. Like when when you're working with an AF workflow, it seems to really chug hard.
Well, I think it depends on like the type of media that you're using too, but like I haven't noticed that to be the case. Like with, if it's all DNX footage, I haven't noticed it to be particularly ill performing. I think it might just be like the, something to do with the ISIS. Are you still working off the ISIS?
Yeah, we're actually, storage? Yeah, we're upgrading our ISIS as well. So we'll see if that's a big improvement.
Yeah. I mean, it could just be like an ISIS behavior thing where it's got, you know, a massive database that it's accessing from, you know. I do think that there's something to be said for the idea of what you did actually to get out of that pickle you were in, Jason. You know, consolidating your media is always kind of a helpful thing. You know, not having a lot of extra stuff sort of taking up a lot of space. Well, that's one thing that can kind of be useful in an Avid workflow and is tough to do on with an ISIS system is, you know, basically consolidate your sequence to particular folder on in your Avid media folders files so that Resolve isn't looking all over the place or whatever conform system you're functioning in isn't looking all over the place for that media. If that media is contained in, say, one or two folders rather than 100, it's generally going to behave a lot better. You're going to have a better conform.
Yeah, I mean, generally when we're still doing an offline to online workflow. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is when we're ready to up-res whatever show is potentially locked, we make one new workspace for each episode. And each episode has all the media that's transcoded right into that same workspace, which is just looks like a drive to anybody mm-hmm. else. Pretty much, it's a bigger question too, is you end up inheriting a lot of problems from however your offline is set up as well.
Sure.
So however your show is actually set up, there's a lot of, like, if the tape are named wrong, if there's no time code on a clip, if you're mm-hmm. working with 38 gig GoPro files, you mm-hmm. know, it's a problem.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, or you're dealing with stuff that was shot on DSLR and they didn't transcode it, or RED files where they changed the tape name or they screwed up the frame rate.
There's a lot of things you kind of have to get around with the work, any of the workflows getting in and out. But one of the things that I have a really big problem with is time-lapse material. So somebody sits at a camera, they let it roll for like 60 minutes, and then they take it down to 3 seconds. So it's like a 2,000 or 3,000% increase. Well, when I bring that into Resolve, then I have a full hour that I have to render out of that, which is not really ideal. So what I usually do is the age-old solution that we used to do in color is that you would export a quick time of that time lapse. You would bring it back in and overcut it. And then once you go into Resolve, then you just have a 5 second clip that you need to render out. So it saves you a lot of time on that end. It's kind of a pain because you have to go through and find all your time lapse shots. But sure. It's, you know, it's
better,
just
better
one
than
of those things.
An hour of footage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'll say one thing for me is I think I find myself going through and I do this in FCP, you can do it in Premiere as well, you know, just kind of going through and looking for before I send it out to conform, before I start that round trip process, I'll look through it and look for trouble spots. So, you know, always do a kind of a cleanup pass, you know, check for still images that might be an issue that are in the cut. Check for, you know, in FCP 7, you used to be able to like organize by reel name. And so you'd see all the clips kind of, you know, you could look at your master clips, look at the reel names, and you could immediately see if there were clips that didn't have reel names and didn't have time code. And you could add the time code and add a reel name before you tried to conform it out. It would make conform a lot easier when everything has time code and real
yeah.
names, and go through the sequence and kind of, you know, make sure everything's flattened down. Make sure you're not referencing a lot of media that's not actually in the picture.
Do you guys remember that application for FCP called Edit Mule?
No, actually.
Well, there was this thing where it was, you know, what ends up happening is sometimes you'll have a very sloppy editor where there's like three or four tracks.
Sometimes.
You know, I've been hearing that some editors are sloppy. Let's say you have three or four clips stacked on top of each other, you know, and the clips on V1, 2, and 3 are not doing anything because it's covered by what's on V4.
Sure.
Well, what Edit Mule used to do is it would figure out where all of those clips were and just flatten it all down so that if you weren't using a clip,
oh my God, that would have saved me so much time.
It was like a $50 application. It was great.
I had no idea. Why didn't I know about this? That's awesome.
I guess they don't make it anymore, but it's something that should be made in the NLEs. Like the NLEs should just have that as a feature, just like we have commit multicam edits or something. It's like, commit all of the actual unused clips in this and bring them all down to V1 if needed.
Well, I think where it gets tricky is you have things like you have some features in, for example, FCPX or even FCP where you have plugins that can reference other clips below the current clip.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
So it is possible to kind of have some gotchas there where it's like, you know, you might be flattening something that you're not supposed to flatten.
Yeah.
But that's why it's good to also kind of do it by eye and just do sort of a review pass and, you know, see if you catch any obvious mistakes. And then I think the last thing I would say in terms of tips is I find just taking out, it kind of relates to your tip about burning in the big speed ups. I get a lot of conforms, particularly with docs where people are doing fit to fill edits just to kind of add a few frames to something or at. So you'll end up with this, like, you know, 96% speed slowdowns or, you know, and it's a mess to deal with anyway. And I think a bad way of doing things, but I find just taking out those speed effects in the conform version of the cut and sending that for round trip. And then when that comes back, you know, you re-add the speed effect, or you can just copy and paste effects from one version of the clip to the other so that you get that speed effect back, rather than having to try to conform to something that's got that weird speed change that usually messes up the conform process.
Yeah.
Sure.
The one tip that I would have, and this is sort of going toward the broader idea of your strategy as a colorist, and this is more of a situation if you're a freelancer or if you're working on projects on your own. So not necessarily if you're in a TV workflow, but if you're actually getting clients that are bringing you projects and then you are then conforming them. One of the things that I've found to be really nice is that generally the most time-consuming or unexpected part of trying to do a project for a client is the conform. And so even though I try to vet them in the initial conversation, I'm like, okay, is everything the same frame rate? You know, do you have all of your media, you know, sort of on the same drive? And do you have it collected so that I can get at it and all these various things? They'll be like, yeah. But then ultimately there will be all these things that are often not right or not as they thought. And so what I do is people often ask me for, say, some kind of compromise on my rate. And so I start my rate off fairly high. And what I'll do is I'll bring my rate down in exchange for them taking care of their own conform tasks. And if they can, what I do is they say, you know, how can I get a better rate? And I say, well, if you can make my life better, I'll make yours better monetarily. If you're able to take care of, say, flattening your own timeline, which often they're better at because they know their own timeline, you know. And then I'll go and I'll say, like, you need to go through all of your footage and make sure all of it's the same frame rate, let's say. Or you need to go and bake in all your own speed changes. Changes, you know, and a lot of times they know how to do that, but what they'd love to do is just hand you the drive and leave. And so what I do is if you're ever in a situation where you're bargaining for some sort of compromise rate or the client would like a deal, a great bucket to go to is the conform bucket, because you take that off your plate, you make your life a lot nicer. And if you can get a situation where they want a good rate from you, we'll make it so that they allow you to just do the fun parts like the color largely. So, and don't spend like 3 days of your 6 days available for grading in conform. So
do you then have like a penalty fee if they don't, like, absolutely. If they don't do it to
and
your
there's a big
specification?
Board on the wall that names them all like a fee list. You will be subject to those fees if you do not.
It's like those people with the bad credit cards. They have the really bad photos of all of them.
Right, exactly.
The bad conforms. Yeah.
This man does not conform correctly.
Exactly. Yeah, this man is guilty of bad conform.
Yeah, the frame rate was not exactly right.
So, anyway.
When you go to a dedicated color shop, like you go to Company 3 or, you know, whatever, they are happy to bill you for ridiculous amounts of money for the conform process, but they generally would prefer not to, just like we would generally prefer not to. And so they have very specific guidelines of this is what you should deliver, which is, you know, it's usually your source media and EDL, you know, your source media generally converted to DPX. That's what they're going to do anyway. And so, you know, what they're getting is usually something that's, you know, a really, really straightforward conform, because they don't want to futz with it any more than we want to futz with it. So that's kind of a good guideline. You know, the kind of the easier you can make your conform, the better off you are. If you can, and that's a great tip, Jason, if you can let your client handle that, you know, and it, as a way to save money, which it is, because the less time you spend in conform, the less time you're going to spend on the project, and the better it's an outcome it's going to be, because you can then really focus in on let's do the color rather than figuring out, wait, what is the actual source for this clip? Is it this clip or that clip or the other clip?
It's a tough part of post-production. I would say it's sort of like where a lot of late nights have been spent by many people.
It's true.
Yeah. So, all right. I guess if you guys are listening and want to continue the conversation, you can take a look and check us all out on Lift Gamma Gain. My name is Jason Myris. I'm a colorist from Los Angeles. I'm on Twitter at Jason Myris, and you can check out my website at jasonmyris.com.
And I'm Josh Petock, a colorist also in Los Angeles. You can see me also on Twitter at Josh Petock.
And I'm Juan Salvo, a colorist in New York City. And you can catch me on Twitter at J_Salvo. And, you know, I'm all over the place on Lift Gamma Gain and other places. And we hope this was helpful to you, and happy conforming.